Well, let's find out more for you now on this preliminary deal signed electronically between the US and Iran on the conflict in the Middle East. A formal signing is expected later this week in Geneva, but questions remain around key issues with discussions on Iran's nuclear program and the potential lifting of sanctions still unresolved. This is what US Vice President J.D. Vance had to say a short time ago on CNN.
The MOU is about a page and a half, so it is a very general document, but this has been very much part of the conversations that we've had with the Iranians. And on a number of issues, we are going to have to figure this stuff out during the technical negotiation phase. But what the MOU does is set up a framework whereby the Iranians get the benefits of the bargain by meeting their obligations under the bargain.
That's J.D. Vance there. Well, there are questions about the future of Lebanon, of course, after the Israeli Prime Minister this morning said his forces would remain in the country's south. David Satterfield is the former US ambassador to Lebanon and also served as special envoy for Middle East humanitarian issues under the Biden administration. David, welcome back to Breakfast.
Delighted to be with you again.
The full text of this agreement hasn't been published as yet, but details are starting to emerge about some of what's in it. What do we know so far?
Well, what we know so far is that a number of the critical issues involving the nuclear program are being kicked forward to negotiations to take place over an apparent 60-day period once this memorandum of understanding is signed on Friday. We also know that in some fashion there is an Iranian commitment to opening the Strait of Hormuz. Now, this is the critical issue. What does opening the Strait mean? Is it return to the status quo that preceded February 28th when this campaign began? Is there any guarantee that Iran in the future will not impose fees, charges, some form of tariff or tax on ships passing through? Not clear.
President Trump says the Strait of Hormuz will be reopened in response to the lifting of the US blockade. Do you think both sides are on the same page here and they will adhere to any details?
Great question. The experience of the indirect negotiations that have taken place over the last many weeks to try to reach a settlement to open the strait have shown there is a misunderstanding, confusion, uncertainty as to what each side interprets the terms to mean. And I would not be surprised if that occurs again.
Does this agreement put us in any better position than before the war began?
No, it does not. Quite to the contrary. What began as a war of choice by President Trump and Israel has resulted in a negotiated end of compulsion upon the United States. No, the world, the global market, Iran's neighbors, Israel are in a worse position now than they were when this campaign began, because Iran has demonstrated to all of us, to the world, that it has the ability to close the Strait of Hormuz, and that there is nothing that can be done kinetically to force them to reopen.
Is 60 days long enough to negotiate a more comprehensive agreement?
Depends on what you mean by the two terms, comprehensive and agreement. If this is all about a face-saving way out for the president, in which there are some declaratory, performative statements by Iran, which the U.S. then presents as an improvement over the JCPOA of 2015, that's the Joint Comprehensive Agreement on the Nuclear Issue, then that's doable in 60 days. But if it's a genuine agreement of the sort that traditionally one would use in this case, no, I don't think 60 days are enough. But I doubt very much that is what the Trump administration is interested in. It is almost entirely performative.
In the short term, is there any risk that things could fall over before Friday when this agreement is supposed to be signed in Switzerland?
Oh, my goodness, this is the Middle East. And there is every possibility that things can fall apart. But frankly, I would give you a less than likely assessment that in the next 4 days, this will collapse. But should it, the cause is likely to be Hezbollah and Israel. Mm-hmm. Israel is not happy, the government of Israel, with this agreement. Not at all. And they have reason not to be happy with it. There's no addressal of the ballistic missile program, Iran's funding and military support to its terrorist proxy militias, the Houthis in Yemen, Hezbollah in Lebanon, Hamas in Gaza. And it really doesn't comprehensively address the nuclear issue in the kind of definitive terms that Israel had hoped. And it does do something that is very much not in either the U.S. interest or Israel's interest, which is sooner or later, should the strait indeed be reopened, Iran is going to get paid for this. They're going to get paid in terms of frozen assets or a relief from sanctions. And you can put whatever label you want on this, but it's money transferred to Iran. That is a bad thing indeed. And I would be concerned that there is the possibility of Lebanon being the source of an upset over the days ahead.
Does Israel have the power to upend the deal, or is it likely to withdraw?
Oh, well, Israel is not withdrawing from Lebanon. They have made very clear they have no intention of withdrawing. Indeed, some of the statements in the last 24 hours from various Israeli government officials would indicate they are not being bound or don't regard themselves as bound by this agreement at all. But again, what is the agreement? What are the terms that apply to Lebanon other than an end to the fighting? That's something we're going to have to see. But I'll underscore again, Israel is not happy at all with this agreement. And Prime Minister Netanyahu is in the midst of the electoral campaign of his political life. And I believe we will be very reluctant to do anything which displays his leadership as anything other than aggressive and committed on the issue of Hezbollah, Lebanon, and Iran.
What are the lessons for the United States from what has happened so far?
Well, there's a fundamental lesson here, which is that you do not go to war. You don't enter a conflict without having assessed thoroughly and assessed in the world in which we live, not an imaginary or fantasized world, what the odds are of your being able to achieve your strategic objectives. And of course, you have to know what are your strategic objectives before you go in. What are your priorities? What does the other side bring to its fight against what you're trying to achieve? None of this was done in this case. And boy, that's a fundamental lesson for this administration, for any administration.
David Satterfield, thank you very much for joining me again on Breakfast.
Thank you.